again, she said. I've wasted too much time here, fear, as the clock ticked slowly next to my softly swaying head. And she had, but I'd wasted more. Her anger was too quiet for her to hear it, so she smiled, made a cup of tea, opened the newspaper, pretended to read. I hung over the bunk bed like from a precipice, the moment of decision broken glass on my tongue. Her mascara was running again. Black serpents coiling around her breasts, the only mark of her pain. My tears always ran clear. Poised to jump or speak from my mattress mountain, I studied the lines of her face and couldn't move. She never glanced upward. It seemed to hurt her neck to watch anything in flight. That's why I started climbing. I could study her better undetected as she sat unmoving for years, IKEA catalog open on her lap. I'd hang by my toes from the chandelier, awaiting the moment she'd decide, again, to leave. Her eyes would flutter into focus as she remembered her feet. Then I would turn on the radio and distract her with always the same song. Climbing became an obsession. One day I reached so high she became a speck far below. Toes propped up on a cloud, I allowed my mind to wander elsewhere. But the birds would have their way, forcing flight into my thoughts, their wings flapping like the pages of her catalog. Descent seemed an impossibility, my muscles unable to go downwards, so I invested in binoculars and loved her from afar.
This is J.D. Doyle, and welcome back to Queer Music Heritage, and my salute to spoken word recordings by GLBT artists. And that one, called Nest, was framed in a very nice musical setting by a Scottish duo called Zoras, from the 2009 CD named We Apologize for Any Inconvenience. But I bet they don't really mean it. Some of you may know that the first hour of each QMH show is aired as a part of the Houston radio show Queer Voices, and as that is on a public broadcast station, it means I have to be mindful of the language of what I play. But not here on the internet, so let the games begin. Now, that doesn't mean I went looking for the dirtiest stuff I could find, but that I can play tracks that use words like fucking. Ryan Tejada did that right away in his short 2001 track called Trans Slam.
Inside of me a monster, fucking and sucking out my energy, leave me blessed, no spirit, I'm restless to find hope. I'm messed, not feared, I can't clear it, I can't cope. In jeopardy, moving weatherly, and everyone is after me, after me. The importance of the character that I've become, what I once was, is altering and fading. There's no name, and I've been shaming. I'm turning shades of yellow and red, and I'm trying to cope. But my mind says rebel, and all I find are thoughts of rope. So I'm lugging my bones through the path of life, crying, turning sluggish and dying, wishing I was flying. But the wind is so far, my inside's another star not shining. Burning and hurting when they go up and die, losing flight, losing mind, turning blind, and can't find any aspiration but temptation for this alteration of my body to please my mind. Can you please help me to find? I need a doctor for the double incision, seeking no revision. Just a bilateral mastectomy, and then I'll feel revised and free. Can you blame me for the hatred boiling up inside me? Can't tame me of the pain that's making my pride flee. You say set this aside and the guilt will subside, but I've been taking the strides, and my mind still collides. Pulls me under the tide, and my mouth's open wide. Would you be able to push the shame aside? Am I ready to die?
The Lesbian Avenger. So I said to him, if you mean wet, sweaty, screaming the pseudonym of a woman she hardly knows, pressed up against the wall of the nearest bathroom stall at my most recent show, my efforts resulting in the multiple, consecutive orgasms she so desperately desired, then yeah, I fucked her. You don't treat your wife right, you're gonna lose her, you know. For a minute, he looked like he wanted to hit me, but he cried like a baby instead. I was born to be a Catholic schoolgirl. Hot little plaid skirts and all kidding aside, seducing unhappy women has been my hobby since age 15. They go through that approaching middle-age slump where they don't feel hip anymore and decide to be experimental in a way that disqualifies that time they were little kids playing doctor with some second cousin. The ones with poor self-image are first to declare they're bisexual. Have to give ugly girls credit for trying to improve their odds, huh? Women who've been married a couple of years hit that dry spell. Got husbands they rarely talk to anymore. Especially about things that matter, like their relationship. They get itchy and dissatisfied. They want to start buying jeans one size smaller. And you know who they imagine peeling off those new pants? Loud-mouthed younger bitch in the spiked dog collar. If you have to see it to believe it, just pay a little attention. Half the time I'm sitting in the corner minding my own business and sipping on my Guinness when pussy walks right up to me. The other half the time is when that girl tells your girl how good it was. If I made just $5 for every time I fucked an uncaring man's fed-up wife, I'd have enough cash for a small island vacation. Outside the effort to be a good lay, this doesn't require much of me. You act like I put on my pants both legs at once for the challenge or something. A woman who feels neglected makes herself an easy target, you know. She wants to believe I'm the great American badass because she wants to be banging a rock star. And now that I'm used to that kind of fucking, I'm beginning to feel un-fuck-withable, overflowing with cheap shottery, tomfoolery, haberdashery. So as long as women surrender to what they imagine is cleverness, you men who want to keep them better be on your very most attentive toes, because you never know what's around the next corner, and all I'm saying is, hey, mister, I'm around that corner.
I'll never fit in a bathroom stall, a gender terrorist, a pirate on your high seas of assumptions. I want you to look at me. My body is my battlefield. This is my revolution. I want to show you my life, my body, naked and raw, bloody and burned, trying not to pass as anything. Look at me. I make you uncomfortable. My pronouns confuse you. I make you think. I hate gender. I'm tired of its game, and yet it is my addiction, my obsession. I can't get through the day without it playing a part, me playing mine, a part, an act, a drag number. I am in constant drag. Trans man, trans woman, dyke, fag, butch, femme. The last time I killed myself, I stopped trying to get a stranger to do it for me, grabbed the gun and blew away that part of my gender that had been screaming for someone, anyone to see, stopped walking down the street praying to get bashed so I wouldn't have to look at what I had become. A year after I stabbed myself and drowned in thick, murky vials of maleness that I had lied in order to get, I picked up my bags and walked away from the gender I had built. I had told him I wanted a dick, and the letter he wrote me said I was happy living in the male gender role, that I had always been a man, and he knew I would never change my mind. It was never considered, never taken into account, that I could be something else. Without a needle in my leg, the community turned and walked away, too bothered by my gender addiction or afraid to face their own. I was alone again, a dyke. I pretended to be stone. I brought the razor to my face, scraped away who I used to be, and watched it wash down the drain. My body declared war on me. Don't trust anything that bleeds for 5 days and doesn't die. I don't trust my body. In the eyes of your world, I've become just another girl. In order to be myself, I break the rules. I spent a year as a man, my childhood a tomboy, everything in between as a butch dyke. My life has been spent fearing I would become my mother, that I would become a target. I became what I wanted to fall in love with. This was all a lie.
The first time I was called a bitch, I was in my Honda, wondering if anyone had seen me. I was just becoming Rika, and the worst part was getting from my apartment to my car. I was sure that the moment I stepped outside, that this invisible spotlight would come on and all the neighbors would look outside their windows and point and laugh. This time I was lucky. Of course, I was going to have to get back in my apartment later, but that should be okay, as long as those kids aren't outside. So I'm in my Honda, my head in a zillion places. I change lanes. Suddenly, I hear a honk and this guy yells, "Bitch!" And I think, yes, I pass! Hell yeah, no asshole for me. Look out, world, I'm a bitch. Being called a dyke was sort of the same. I was with my girlfriend, and a car full of high school students speed by and yell, "Fucking dykes!" But instead of being pissed, I'm thinking, "That's right, motherfuckers, I got dyke right here for you." Sometimes holding an empty cup means you've had nothing. Sometimes it means you've had everything. And sometimes it means you finally have something to hold. I can want equality so much, I'll sacrifice self-respect. But what's equality? My father told me that because I was Japanese, I had to be more than other people, just to be treated the same. This father beat me, cut me, tried to drown me. But that has nothing to do with what he said. He could have been the gentlest father in the world, and those words would have held just as true. Near my hometown, older Chinese can't practice Tai Chi in their yards without being harassed by neighbors. I ask my mother why they don't call the police. She laughs. The police won't listen to them. They're Asian. And so they don't practice to blend in with their non-Asian neighbors, to be equal. Sometimes holding an empty cup means you've had nothing. Sometimes it means you've had everything. And sometimes it means you finally have something to hold. I hate math. Not because it's difficult, but because I won't like the answers. I don't want the wrong answer because that would hurt. And I don't want the right answer because that would hurt more. How does subtraction equal addition equal subtraction equal equality? Since I'm queer, do I have to hide my sex toys and preach monogamy and go easy on the activism and buy clothes at the fucking Gap just so I can be like those fundraising brochures that say queers are like everybody else? And with your help, one day, maybe we can be treated equally, please, 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 oh please? The HRC says if I send money and stick their equal sign on my bumper, I'll take an important step toward being treated the same as people who drive without sticking an equal sign on their bumpers. And I know because I'm trans, I have to have surgeries to go into the same space as other women go without surgeries. And I need to be quiet, powerless, and know my place to be accepted by a woman's movement fighting the evil empire that wants me to be quiet, powerless, and know my place. What does demanding equality mean when I can't prove I'm worth considering? I think, therefore I am, falls apart the moment someone doesn't give a shit what you think. And Descartes isn't gonna help when you're walking to your car and someone screams faggot and throws an egg at you. I can reason all I want, But if you only see China Dyke tranny, what can I do? When some loser says, I won't ever be a woman, an American, a wife, or a mother, this person doesn't have to hate me. And those words would hold just as true. I don't want the right answers, because the right answers are always wrong. Sorry, pilgrims, Derrida is nothing new to someone who lives with I am other than what I signify to you. Because I'm a woman who doesn't like being called bitch unless I think you're hot and you're bent over in a Pokemon costume. And as for being a fucking dyke, well, yes, thank you very much. Though with my girlfriend now in Boston, there's not much fucking, and Hitachi only takes you so far. Could you love me? Do you know me? Am I like you? Will you drink from my cup? No day could I say. Learning 600 kanji brush characters doesn't get you any closer to knowing me. Researching every surgeon in Thailand doesn't reveal the first thing about being trans. As for being a dyke in the Indigo Girls, well, the Indigo Girls are a special case. But my identity is not about you, and I couldn't tell you anyway. It's hard not to understand, but sometimes that's as close to the truth as we'll ever get. Because I know the world changes when I'm in love, but I can't explain it. And if I can't explain what I know, how can I convince you of what I don't? Less than or equal to one. Which one? I don't know what it means to be straight or white or whatever passes for a real woman these days. But so what? I'd rather live here than lose myself in definitions, doing math that doesn't work, offers no comfort, and separates me from trying to be whole. Could you love me? I wash my skin, but can't remove the stain. Do you know me? I kiss stoplights and cringe as my family passes by. Am I like you? Sometimes I'm so lonely, I sleep with makeup on. I write a love poem, burn it, and smear the ashes on my hands. Will you drink from my cup? Nonde kudasai. Nonde kudasai. Nonde kudasai.
I really like that last one, and I've played it several times in the past. It is called Less Than or Equal to One, and is by Rika Aoki. I found it on the wonderful Various Artists CD from 2009 called Transgenre Transfusion. It had a follow-up CD, and both contained a number of spoken word tracks, like the one that preceded Rika. That was Sassafras Lowry doing This Was All a Lie. And immediately after Ryan Quesada, you heard Madeline Hatter. The Lesbian Avenger was from her 2005 release, No Morning After.
Touched and not fucked. Felt and not fondled. I like to make love with no roles, with no models. I like to stroke gently every space of a man, and not feel his manhood could be threatened by the simple brush of my hand. I like to throw my neck back and whisper words softly, open a spiritual space like my ancestors taught me. Like a violet at midnight, I want to shine in the moon, taste the rhythm of love at the prism's prelude. And as this countdown continues, let this vessel contract, cathartic contortion of this arch in my back. If I could ever love again, I would ask for just that. I'd ask to love completely, concretely, and black, and black, and black, and black.
Ha! Hi, Mom. How you doing?
I'm fine.
I feel like shit.
I've moved to Brooklyn.
The rent's cheaper.
My boyfriend lives there.
It's pretty safe. There are cops everywhere.
Body parts found in the trash compactor.
I don't trash your letters. I read your letters.
I hate your letters. I rank them in importance with my student loans and publisher's sweepstakes.
Including the Bible quotes. Yes, Mom, I go to church.
I haven't been to confession in 10 years.
How's who? Matt, my roommate from NYU?
I had an M. Butterfly crush on him.
He's great.
I no longer see him.
Sophia?
We broke up.
Sophia and I broke up.
Sophia's a fag hag, a Barney shopping fruit fly.
I'm sure there'll be other women for me.
I'm a man in love with a man.
I've actually started to write poetry.
I'm a pansy poet.
No. It doesn't all rhyme.
Don't show her the poems.
These are my poems. A lot of these poems are very...
gay, homosexual, airbrushed dicks, Walt Whitman, Disney-loving, masturbatory, macho, gender-bending, Key West, sunset, orgasm-filling, sex stall, ejaculatory, lick my boots, butch boy.
Vivid, very vivid.
Friend of Dorothy, Richard Gere, gerbling, anal, intercoursing, Truman Capote, out of the closet, contemporary.
Yes, contemporary.
Contemporary.
But they're good.
Tell her. Give her the gospel truth.
Okay, Mom, we have to talk. When I was young, I went through Dad's porno mags buried under your wedding dress.
I will
dress.
Never forget Suzanne Summers' breasts.
When I was an altar boy, I stole all the bread wafers.
I gave Holy Communion to all of my sisters.
I took your copy of The Joyous Sex.
Semen stains on the carpet.
Don't mention the semen. I mean, see, Mom? Your menopause bugs the hell out of me as much as your singing.
Quit your goddamn singing!
I'm a man in love with a man, and I'm a gay man, and I live with a man. I've always been in love with men.
Brian Bradley from the drama club. I wanted to take him to the prom.
Ever since you gave me my first Disney record player.
Mr. Rink, the music teacher.
As soon as my poetry came out,
I came out. It's one thing to be straight acting.
But when I'm writing, I can't lie. I write because I loathe the conformity of Catholic military school.
Names I loathe
years cruising
love,
the streets in search
stuck between
with men
my
with
teeth,
long coats, hats.
Hiding from guys like me, like a cross. A Gethsemane I could not change.
The only close personal contact was a trail of cigarette smoke.
I swooned on cigarette smoke.
You feel you lost your son in an asylum of skyscrapers.
I know how scared you are of this world. Please don't feel that you failed a maternity test.
But I don't want to have to come home like I am the sick nephew, prodigal son.
Keep him away from the babies, especially the boys.
He'll
contaminate the boys like
sour
milk.
Don't blame genetics, Dad. God.
My poetry is a sacrament no church would have granted.
My life has borne a poetry no woman could provide.
Praise God from whom all
if you listen to my words,
flow.
You will never notice the absence of bridesmaids being serenaded by quarts of rice or miss the sound of baby footsteps. If you listen to my words fall without the sound of stars like grace of your denial,
Father, Son, and
don't ever
Holy
think that I am not
Ghost.
Your son or that I honor you any less. Here are my poems. Love them.
I want to write a gay poem because I'm a gay poet. You know it isn't right. To judge me on that on behalf of every booty-shaking gay boy, I want to say, boy, no. We don't all want to sleep with you the way you think we do. If I wrote a gay poem, it would have 2 points, 2 joints that turn and bend and send clouds of misunderstanding on their way to rain. First, I'd explain that I don't know how to be any other thing. Secondly, sing praises to my creator and later call his name out loud. If I wrote a gay poem, I'd say I hadn't somehow become sick or longed for my mother's pantyhose or lipstick. My sisters didn't play too much Barbie with me for a real man to be brewing inside of me. I'd say that this isn't an illness to be mending. We're pretending that this is a problem to be solved, involved in making sure our children continue not to understand a fundamental fact about man. Some of us aren't straight. If I wrote a gay poem, I'd show them that I am not just a stereotype and the hype of such accusations are merely augmentations of reality, and we'd all see the truth if we looked hard enough. I'd say that I am not a thin man tan from his time in San Francisco, because what do they know? I'm not hot on a beach resting, rippled muscles running with sweat and wet sand between my toes. My poem would tell people that AIDS is not a gay disease, and please start educating kids about sex. The rest of their lives they will need it to beat it before it claims any more. A war must be waged. We're turning a page on the eve of destruction. And what will be left if we're kept in the dark where our kids do their part to get laid? I would explain that my father's reaction to this newfound contraption he once called a son had begun to conjure up confusion. That he didn't have much to say of the way that I lived, but to give a half-hearted, Jesus loved everyone, he just didn't always love what they did. And how I took that to heart from a man who in part created the man that I am, and the sham that it is when you can't look your kid in the eye when he comes home for Christmas. I'd say there are some far-reaching misconceptions about gender in this world. Boy and girl are simply not all that exist. Those that resist are chastised for this because their sexes are limitless, what is with people. My poem would ring with tales of kings and queens by means of tape. It would say I'm not gay because I was raped, not scarred from my past. I detest all that crap. You know, if you watched for the signs, I've been gay for a long fucking time. I want to write a gay piece that will release all the pent-up frustration inside me, let you see how I feel. If I could form into words all the pain and the hurt that I feel when someone tells me I don't have their rights, I might show everyone they haven't won with words or with deeds this fight. We will not stop until we are equal, a sequel to Dr. King's plight. I would say my God does not damn a woman or a man for being in love, and 7 sentences translated through time do not define a world which Christ spoke of. I would insist I have strength in my wrists. I would tell people that lesbians don't hate men. Then again, they don't really have a use for them. Lesbians don't all play sports. Of course, some of them do, and you can't assume that all gay men should spend a little more time working on their cars than getting ready for the bar if they want to beat this thing. It brings questions to mind, like, what kind of heterosexist world is this? This is one thing I would say about all those gay, bi, transgender, queer, in closets, in fear, boys with an I, women with a Y, multi-mixed gender twink or bear bartenders, friends of Mary, fairies and fags, progressive questioning hags. We all live life bravely, day after day. As was our destiny when we were born this way.
Starting that set was Yolo Akili. He lives in Harlem and is a counselor, social justice worker, and of interest to this show, a performance artist. His piece from 2010 was called Concretely. Next came Reggie Kabiko with help from Taylor Malley, doing one called Coming Out. Kabiko is a much-published poet and has also appeared on HBO's Deaf Poetry Jam. That piece was from 2010. And I found that last one, called Home for Christmas, on the MySpace site of a North Carolina performer just going by the name Rue. 3 fun pieces coming up. First is Ivan Coyote and A Butch Roadmap from 2010, to be followed by S. Bear Bergman, telling about her boxer briefs.
I'm going to read this story. It's called A Butch Roadmap. A couple of months back, I came upon an article in the online version of Extra. It's a Canada's kind of queer magazine, entitled Winnipeg Pride Wants Parade to Be Family Friendly. In the article, the then chair of last year's Pride Parade was quoted as saying, "We have to remember that this is a public event. Part of the parade is to show people we're not extremists." When pressed to explain just what she meant by extremists, she responded, "Drag queens and butch women." She then added, "It was important to show the people of Winnipeg that there are mainstream queer community members too, like lawyers and doctors." Now, I'm Canadian. So this meant I was so mad, I seriously considered writing a stern letter. The subtext of her words stung my eyes and burned in my throat. Apparently, according to this fucking genius, regardless of my politics or my attitude or tactics, I was an extremist by virtue only of my appearance. Nothing of who I was or what I might contribute to my community mattered because of what I looked like. And in order to be acceptable to the good citizens of Winnipeg, we needed to put forward a more mainstream face to the general public, liberally laced with professionals. And I wondered how this line of reasoning was going to go over with the many perverted transsexual leather dyke lawyers from working class backgrounds I am lucky enough to know. And apparently this woman hadn't read that part of queer history where drag queens and butches started the whole fucking thing by finally standing up and rioting in response to police persecution and brutality. And now she didn't want us at her parade anymore. We weren't family friendly enough. And then I wondered what exactly this meant for those of us with families. Then just recently, I heard a rumor that the younger queers don't like the word butch anymore. And this makes me wonder if I were 20 years old again instead of 40, what would I call myself? I grew up without a roadmap to myself. Nobody taught me how to be a butch. I didn't even hear the word until I was about 25 years old. I first became something I had no name for in solitude, and only later discovered the word for what I was and realized there were others like me. So now I am writing myself down, sketching directions so that I can be found or followed. If the word for you is butch, remember this word. It will be used against you. If the word for you is butch, then your history is one of strength and survival and largely silent. Do not hide this word under your tongue. Do not whisper it or sweep it under the basement stairs. Let it fill up your chest and widen your shoulders. Wear it like a sleeve tattoo, like a medal of valor. Learn to recognize other butches for what they really are. Your people, your brothers, or your sisters. You see, both are just words that mean family. Other butches are not your competition. They are your comrades. Be there when they need you. Go fishing together. Help each other move. And move. And move. And move. Polish your rims or your chrome or your boots or your knobs together. See these acts for what they really are. Solidarity. Do not give your butch friend a hard time about having a ponytail or a Pekingese Pomeranian cross or nail polish or even a fucking smart car. Get over yourself. You are a rare species, not a stereotype. Trim your nails short enough that you could safely insert your fingers into your own vagina, should you ever want to. Scars and purple thumbnails are a status symbol. When attempting to operate, maintain, or repair anything mechanical, always remember the words of my grandmother. The vast majority of machines are still designed, built, driven, and fixed by men. Therefore, they cannot be that complicated. Be exceptionally nice to little old ladies. They really need their faith in the youth of today restored, and they might think that you're the youth of today. Let them butt in line at the Safeway. Slow down and walk with them at crosswalks so they're not the only ones holding up traffic. Drive your grandmother to bingo. Shovel her driveway. Let chivalry not be dead. Misogyny, we can do away with, but chivalry? If you're going to be the kind of butch who is often read as a man or a boy, then be the kind of man or boy you wish you would have slept with in high school. Be a gentleman. Let her finish her sentence. Share the armrest. Do her laundry without shrinking anything this time. Buy her her very own cordless drill. Open doors for gigantic bodybuilding men and say things like, here, let me get that for you. Carry a pocket knife, lighter, and a handkerchief on your person at all times. Learn flashy lighter tricks, how to tie a half hitch, a slip knot, and a double Windsor. Learn how to start a fire with a flint and some dry moss, and then forevermore use lighter fluid or gasoline and a blowtorch. Burn most of your eyebrows off lighting the barbecue with a birthday candle, and then tell everybody all about it. Wear footwear that makes a clomping sound, as opposed to a tick or a swish. Let the weird hairs on your chin and around your nipples grow unhindered. Learn how to quilt, crochet, or hook rugs. Women appreciate a fellow who isn't afraid of their feminine side. Practice saying you're sorry. However you people say it, I don't know. Practice saying you're sorry. This is one activity where you should not use your father as a role model. Fonzie was a fucking asshole. And if you are too young to remember who the Fonz was, YouTube it. Locker room talk? No, man. A surefire way not to get laid a second time. Sleep around. This time without feeling guilty.
This is a piece called Boxer Briefs. The same year I cut my hair short, I started wearing men's underwear. Someone gave me a pair of soft, gray cotton jersey boxer shorts, and I fell in love with them. They were far more comfortable than my jockey for her briefs, no unfinished seams chafing the tender spot where my leg meets my body, that soft place that should never be subjected to elastic. And I felt more confident in them, more attractive, like taking off some of my clothes in front of an object of desire would be a far better proposition if taking off my pants didn't result in me trying to make hair melt in my arms while clad in panties. I understand that this works just fine for some people, perhaps for you, but not for me. A t-shirt and boxer shorts, or even just the shorts, let me imagine myself taller, more handsome. I felt good in the space I was taking up. All of a sudden, I felt more confident in my clothes and out of them. Slowly, I started throwing out my jockeys for her and buying more boxer shorts. I hadn't really considered how this might play at home, however. I was still a college student and brought my laundry home at breaks, as college students will. When my mother first saw my boxer shorts, the dryer finished and I was too slow to empty it, she waved them at me, questioningly, both, I think, hoping and fearing that their appearance in my laundry was a direct result of a boy in my bed. I explained that they were mine, that I had switched, and managed to make a case for them being cute. Remembering in the dimness of my brain a fad from summer camp in which girls wore men's boxers with festive things printed on them as shorts. I told her I thought they were fun, if I recall correctly, was the exact word I used. She bought it. We tacitly hid them from my father, who I suspected was not going to be as willing to get on board with his only daughter and the apple of his eye wearing men's underwear on a regular basis. Shortly after this, boxer briefs were introduced to the underpants-wearing public, and I was instantly a convert. I bought several pairs and was always on the lookout for more, as very few manufacturers made them at the time. They were even better than boxer shorts, just as comfortable, but with a much lower tendency to climb up my ass as I walked. Besides which, they fit my thighs rather than fluttering about, as the boxer style sometimes did. I didn't really want to flutter in my manly underwear. Chief among the innovators was Calvin Klein, and so, during a family trip to the outlet malls in Kittery, Maine, Mom and I went over to CK to see whether we could pick me up a few more pair. We did, and these had a new innovation. Two buttons on the fly. I was in underwear heaven. I could just imagine myself in my black boxer briefs with the button fly, taking off my pants in front of some desirable person and feeling not an ounce of discomfort. I put the bag with the four new pair in the trunk and got in the car with my folks and brother, and we headed up the road to the Weather Vane, a sprawling seafood emporium right there on the state highway, for a big family lunch. Until my father looked in the trunk. Suddenly, he was brandishing my underwear, literally, over his head, there in the parking lot, asking my mother whether that was what she had bought for me at Calvin Klein. When she allowed that it was, he turned red in the face and started screaming at the top of his lungs, demanding to know why she had done it and why I was wearing them and what the hell was going on. He went absolutely ballistic. I mean, full tilt boogie. Whenever anyone says gender panic these days, this is the image that flashes across my brain pan. Someone's father in a parking lot somewhere having the screaming fantods over some distinctly other gendered underthings. My father saw me rather more clearly in that moment than nearly everyone else. Even through his rage, he must have known that the short hair and then the men's underwear in the space of 6 months was not a positive sign that I was well on the way to becoming the daughter he had imagined when I appeared on the scene in the autumn of 1974. Several pieces came into focus for him for the first time. He looked at me with a mixture of wonder and horror that I don't think I've seen since. Before continuing to rant and rave about what the hell and I'm not paying for this, how dare you, and so on. He stormed back toward the restaurant. I announced that I would be walking back to Connecticut. He told me I oughtn't bother going back to Connecticut as I wouldn't be allowed in the house when I got there. We were great arguers. Until my mother came outside and made us shut up and come inside and sit down and eat lunch. My father and I glowered at each other. We didn't mention the incident again. I started piling my men's underwear on the top of my folded laundry when I came home at school breaks, and I kept wearing them, feeling quietly, unaccountably sexy in them. I kept my mouth shut when, a year later, Dad started wearing the exact same style and brand of boxer briefs as I did. And my mother had to take a laundry marker to his so we could tell them apart in the folding piles on the laundry room floor.
You fellas want some more to drink? No, but I think I like the sound of that. Fellow sir boy, I enjoy the recognition as a man. In the Ryan's Buffet line, I find that teenage boys are not told to watch their weight. I fill my plate with pot pies and wings and all the things this growing boy needs. Cross Kentucky, not Illinois, two boys in a Jeep creep towards manhood, learning what we miss in puberty with our eyes. We learn to match other boys' strides. We learn to keep our feet wide and decide we will talk lower and less. And confess we are only 16 when others ask. We buy our cigarette packs in groups of three because our IDs don't match what the cashier sees. We are sneaky motherfuckers. They are sorry suckers. West through Wisconsin and on to St. Paul, and all the while we have them licked. We unzip in men's rooms wondering only how the hell we're gonna pee with our feet facing the right way. And in that stall I pray, let my exit be a clean getaway. Pray that I can pass. Pray that I don't get my ass kicked, butt whipped, pride licked. Pray they don't stick it to me or stick it in me for trying. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit scared, and I'd be lying if I said I didn't care which side of the Mason-Dixon I was fixed in, reminiscing on prior travels, walking gender like a thin line, proving it's half pants, half mind. I change pronouns as I cross state lines. In the South, crouching low and buying clothes only 5'4" from the floor, so my eyes fixate on the boys' department, but my feet gravitate towards the door. North of Virginia, but east of the Mississippi, I slip easily into ladies' rooms because dyke is assumed. Short hair, I resume socially entombed, preserved, cocooned until my second puberty ensues or until we face these third sex issues. Like Peter Pan, I live in the world of boyhood, toy with a leap to manhood, but don't know that I should. Burden my parents, burden my body, voice, froggy face, spotty beard, patchy, dependent on tea like a latchkey kid no more. I'm a chemical whore. But doors would be open. See, I got gray hair showing and I ain't growing any younger. I still hunger for a change. Got a gender anxiety I gotta tame. Got name shame. Same game day after day, year after year. Going through life as a gender queer, looking for answers on the road and in beer. Cause I'm not finding anything inside of me but fear.
I like that last act a lot. It started out as a duo about 10 years ago with the brilliant name of Athens Boys Choir. And after a while, evolved into a solo act, with Katz carrying the trans queer activist music and spoken word mantle ably by himself. There are 4 CDs to pick from, and the selection I chose, Queers in Kentucky, was not the most radical I could have picked, but I just like the perspective in it. It's from the 2004 release, Rhapsody in T. Next is Evelyn Perry, with an excellent piece called Prophet in the Margins.
Wait a second. Just a second. Did I blink? How did I miss this? When did gay become a gold mine? When did homo sex go prime time? When did my previously marginal identity become a marketable entity? When did being gay or lesbian go from catching to cachet? It must have grown inside the boardrooms of the mega corporations. All right, gentlemen, now listen to what I have to say. Imagine you've got 2 men as a couple. Sure, it's disgusting and immoral, but imagine 2 white-collar professionals together means we're talking double earning power. Then minus the dependents, since they have no wives or children. What we're looking at here, fellas, is a cash crop. All we gotta do is convince this target market that our company's on their side. And then they'll dispose of all that income on our cars and clothes and gadgets. They'll buy our liquor at the dance clubs. And gentlemen, our profits could increase by 10%. Well, I can see the times are changing, but not like the Christian right was hoping. Seems family values don't hold a candle to our newfound market value, since it's no longer economically viable to discriminate against the previously disenfranchised. But presently, highly politicized and extremely well-organized group of people that we are. Because as it turns out, we've got money. And not only that, we've got sex appeal. And in the open market, well, as they say, all's fair in love and war. And everyone knows a good war does wonders for the economy. The way the battle against AIDS and HIV must have made the condom industry go delirious with profit joy. And we all know sex and ratings go hand in hand. Like lovers, it's like bisexuals and fences. It's like Birkenstocks and dykes. It's like gay men and their loafers. But if you walked a mile in my shoes, you'd find me talking on the telephone to my friend who's in a crisis, having split up with her boyfriend. She says, I wish I was a lesbian. It would be so much easier with women. And I say, thanks, I think. Though your analysis is lacking. Seems TV's been airing progress. Shows like Queer as Folk and Ellen make it all look quite appealing. But let me tell you that my lifestyle doesn't feel much like a sitcom, since being queer still skates this fine line where love and fear are deeply entwined. The law's still no guarantee against violent discrimination. People's fear still knows no regulation. And when you see me walking down the street, hand in hand with my girlfriend, we're not just a market. We're a target. So don't tell me what you'd rather be, that it's easier to be me, just cause your heart's broken and you've temporarily had it with heterosexuality. My life's not just an alternative, and though there may be profits lurking somewhere in my margins, I'm not coming up with any spare change. I am looking for some real change.
This next artist went by the name Drew Blood, and he died of AIDS in 1998. But in 1990, a reading from his audiobook, This Careful Balance, was captured. Here are three short selections from it.
Last chance. Last chance to stand on this land, on this life, on death. It's in my head. Last chance for this romance. Oh, it's the last time. You don't see me. You don't see me. You don't look in my eyes. You just smile while I half die. We don't talk or share each other's thoughts. There's nothing we do together. We don't even really know each other. No, you don't see me and all the possibilities, the sharing of feelings, or the warm touch of another human being. Don't you see? It's right here in my eye, an end to a miserable life, a chance to be together tonight. God damn, I'm a good man. Look closely and see me, really, for what I am. He knows love. He knows love. He knows I give it freely. I know him. And he gives love reluctantly. It's his manly thing, his sleeveless shirt, his motorcycles and dirt, his muscles and sweat. It's him, his thing. He makes me want to scream. It's his laughter that makes a good thing better. It's us fighting, him punching a wall, me crying. He knows love. He knows I'm somewhere. And if I know him, he'll come back someday.
Rod McEwen is a songwriter, poet, and composer who, especially in the 1960s and 1970s, sold millions of records and books. I'm playing a very short piece by him from 1968 from the then-controversial album In Search of Arrows. It's the opening track, just called Arrows, and I think the words are quite interesting and revealing.
I have to walk at night and be with many, and give myself to many strangers. I don't know why. I only know that people smile sometimes, and and I must smile back. A certain eye, a smile, the way somebody walks. I need mostly love. Everything else must find its place. I need the warm touch, the unfamiliar smile, the umbrella when it rains, the head against the shoulder when the thunder comes, the unfamiliar touch, the knowing that somebody loves me, even for a little while. You'll like my house. The music's okay. The lights are nice. And I'm warm, you'll see. Can you still go home with me knowing the way I am in mourning? Might make you sorry that you did. I mean, it's different for me in the mornings. I'm not afraid of yellow sunlight or suspicious of rooms without music and atmosphere, but things work best for me after 5 o'clock. It's been like this always. And you must believe I'll be good to you for me to work the best. I will, you know. I will try so hard, for it has been so long since I have had a woman or a special friend. So turn the corner with me. Stay close. Don't be afraid, for there is no one else but me. And I am warm. You'll see.
Did you notice the line, "It's been so long since I've had a woman or a special friend"? Well, the next poet is definitely not that subtle. One of the most known and most controversial poets was Allen Ginsberg, a hero of the Beat Generation in the 1950s. In addition to his large catalog of work, it's been said that a major contribution of his was how very open he was about being homosexual, an openness which inspired others later to also be as out as he was. He also challenged obscenity laws, and you will get an example of both in this piece, written in 1968 and recorded in 1976, called Please, Master.
Please, Master, can I touch your cheek? Please, Master, can I kneel at your feet? Please, Master, can I loosen your blue pants? Please, Master, can I gaze at your golden-haired belly? Please, Master, can I gently take down your shorts? Please, Master, can I have your thighs bare to my eyes? Please, Master, can I take off my clothes below your chair? Please, Master, can I kiss your ankles and sole? Please, Master, can I touch lips to your hard muscle, hairless thigh? Please, Master, can I lay my ear pressed to your stomach? Please, Master, can I wrap my arms round your white ass? Please, Master, can I lick your groin curled with blonde, soft fur? Please, Master, can I touch my tongue to your rosy asshole? Please, Master, can I pass my face to your balls? Please, Master, please look in my eyes. Please, Master, order me down on the floor. Please, Master, tell me to lick your thick shaft. Please, Master, put your rough hands on my bald, hairy skull. Please, Master, press my mouth to your prick heart. Please, Master, press my face in your belly. Pull me slowly, strong thumb, till your dumb hardness fills my throat to the base. Till I swallow and taste your delicate flesh, hot prick, barrel, vein, please. Master, push my shoulders away and stare in my eye and make me bend over the table. Please, Master, grab my thighs and lift my ass to your waist. Please, Master, your rough stroke of your hand on my neck, your palm down my backside. Please, Master, push me up, my feet on chairs, till my hole feels the breath of your spit and your thumb stroke. Please, Master, make me say, please, Master, fuck me now. Please, Master, grease my balls and hair mouth with sweet Vaselines. Please, Master, stroke your shaft with white creams. Please, Master, touch your cock head to my wrinkled self-hole. Please, Master, push it in gently, your elbows and wrap round my breast, your arms passing down to my belly, my penis, you touch with your fingers. Please, Master, shove it in me, a little, a little, a little. Please, Master, sink your drawer thing down my behind. And please, master, make me wiggle my rear to eat up the prick trunk till my ass halves cuddle your thighs, my back bent over, till I'm alone, sticking out, your sword stuck throbbing in me. Please, master, pull out and roll slowly into the bottom. Please, master, lunge in again and withdraw to the tip. Please, master, please fuck me again with yourself. Please fuck me. Please, master, drive down till it hurts me. The softness, please, master, make love to my ass. Give body to center and fuck me for good like a girl. Tenderly clasp me, please, master. I take me to thee and drive in my belly yourself, same sweet heat rude you fingered in solitude, Denver or Brooklyn or fucked in a maiden in Paris, Carlos. Please, master, drive me, thy vehicle, body of love drops, sweat, fuck, body of tenderness, give me your dog, fuck, faster. Please, master, make me go moan on the table. Do fuck me like that, in your rhythm, thrill, plunge and pull, back bounce and push down, till I loosen my asshole, a dog on the table, yelping with terror, delight to be loved. Please, master, call me a dog, an ass beast, a wet asshole, and fuck me more violent. My eyes hid with your palms round my skull and plunge down in a brutal hard lash through soft drip fish and throb through 5 seconds to spurt out your semen heat over and over, bamming it in while I cry out your name. I do love thee, please, master.
This is J.D. Doyle, and I'm closing part two with another favorite artist, starting back to the days when he was half of the duo Good Asian Drivers. He's Kit Yan, and he's solo now and released a chapbook this year called As We Fell. From it, I took Return to Butch.
Butch was a slur. The first time I was called that, I was 16 growing up in Hawaii. My best friend said it, and I got so pissed off we didn't speak for 3 months. She used it to describe my looks. I wasn't even or out as queer yet, but I was a golf-playing, rollerblading, always tan t-shirt and shorts kind of girl, and Renee was just trying to say that I was presenting as masculine. But we didn't have that kind of language back then. So she said butch, and I hated her for saying it out loud, even though I wasn't mean, because suddenly I saw myself, knowing that that's how my friends saw me too. When I moved to Boston for business school, I made myself a new identity, watered the little butch seeds in a garden of American queers who celebrated, defined, redefined, and fucked with butch. I was dealing with so much culture shock at the time, I didn't know what hit me. Suddenly, I was a minority, desperately treading manners, food, places, and queerness, not understanding I was assimilating and changing. Short hair, new name, polos, cargo shorts, starched shirts, wide collars, shiny shoes, and dance parties. Whew. The dance parties. Girls who had their eye on me like I was hot. Imagine that. Somewhere in Boston, a baby butch awkwardly dancing with a Heineken against a wall. Her Asian features estrogen soft, but her hard stare of self-reflection and inner turmoil just barely showing enough for girls to wonder, how do I crack that? That was hot. In Boston, I found myself a new family. The slams welcomed my new identity politics-based poetry, my new gay wonder and celebration of self. And the white queers let me in to listen to their radical rants. I skipped so many steps I thought I had to go through. The ridicule, the judgment, the rejection I saw on TV. Queer Boston was a dream. I skipped school to be queer. In my third year, I actually went to the school nurse for a quick fix to my gender. I was sent to a Wellesley Hills psychologist, the kind of place where every waiting room visit was filled with millionaires' kids. And then look at me, a broke-ass immigrant, quietly waiting to get diagnosed because I read somewhere online that I had to have a disorder to change my body. So I sat. For 2 years, I sat, slowly exploring my gender identity and how I'd be a member of society once it was all over. Yo, all over. I actually thought that hormones and surgery would be the end of the long rainbow brick road. So there I was. 2 years in psychotherapy, butch to trans man, trying not to look back. I thought I had to abandon butch. Leave it for a new lesbian to crawl into its oversized shell and walk around in. But how could I hide that butch inside that never really left? When I no longer passed as butch, I still went to dyke bars with my friends. But in the exact same spaces, I wasn't hot anymore. From the bouncers at the door to the people at the bar, things were different. There was so much harassment. But those days were hard. So many questions at the bar just to get a drink. I didn't have time to think about what was happening. I just dealt with the women who kicked me out of the men's restrooms, then wouldn't let me in the women's room. Girls who called me creepy. And the stares came hard. Suddenly, the Boston I loved was gone, but I didn't know where else to go. When people think you're a man, you slowly become one. Is that even true? It's been 5 years now, and I still look in the mirror with a mix of pride and disbelief, and sometimes grief for the woman and man I lost and the one I see a glimpse of on the ugly days. Today, well, I'm a dab butch, and butch questioning, trying to reconnect with the parts of me I loved when I was a baby butch dancing offbeat, a little shy, looking away when eyes were made at me, and remembering that butch has so many definitions. I can try a bunch of them on and not worry if it doesn't fit. As long as I look good when I step in, and my boys are at my side, rocking that pink, that cap, that tie, that neon, that white tee, that ruffle, that bow, we'll just bring all that we got and make that kind of butch more than enough.